This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Well, I've got a new email address for us. I thought we could start with that actually.
Go on.
So I thought that spelling out Chatteroo would be too exhausting for the listeners if every time we gave out the email address,
same with two T's.
Two T's. Is it one R?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so what I've gone for is just chat@cheerfulpodcast.com.
Yeah, that's better.
So that's up and running now.
I think it's one R. I mean, I guess it's whatever we want it to be.
Yeah, unless you want to send us an email, in which case that becomes complicated.
Yeah, okay, so chat. So we have a new email address.
Yes, chat@cheerfulpodcast.com.
And we'd like to hear from people, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. And you know, we were talking about the word of the year.
Yes.
On our last episode
before Riz.
Ben Ansell. We got an email from Joel Corner.
Oh, yeah.
Who said, the man behind the Milliverse.
Yes.
I mean, you could say that you're the man behind the Milliverse
sort
in some senses, but he says...
He's the man behind the man behind the Milliverse.
Exactly. The Milliverse has many fathers.
Yeah.
He says, I thought I'd write in to put Jeff's mind at ease regarding how the word of the year is chosen as somebody who works at the Oxford University Press. The shortlist is decided by the word boffins in the deep vaults, and then said list is sent out to all OUP staff who can help narrow the list down. This year, there was a sort of head-to-head matchup with various words, like a knockout stage in a sports contest. Once the words had been narrowed down, the boffins once again debated which of the remaining words would come out on top. It wasn't a public vote, and the experts always have the final say, so hopefully that helps Jeff sleep at night.
Does it?
It does, yes. It's good to know that there are word boffins in the deep vaults. He also says, if you're ever in Oxford, let me know and I'll get you a tour of the Press Museum. If you like, the Press's museum. It's one of the top eight museums in Oxford, in my opinion.
Wow.
I love that he's got an opinion.
Top eight.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. There's not a top 10, but you can narrow it down to a top eight.
It is one R, by the way.
In Chatteroo?
Yeah.
Okay. I still think chat@cheerfulpodcast.com is nice and easy for people.
Now, I've been texting you sort of slightly too much, maybe.
Never.
About shrinking.
Yes, this is the Apple TV Plus show.
Yes. What have you heard about it?
I know that it's Brett Goldstein is one of the writers, who is a British comedian who I like very much, who's also in Ted Lasso.
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford stars in it with Jason Segel, who I like. He wrote a very good Muppet film some years ago. And you've become obsessed. What is it about it that you love so much?
So I sort of started watching it, I guess, just before Christmas, and then... At sort of post Christmas, have sort of binged the rest of it, and then I did something which I'd never ever do, which is I started watching it all the way through again last night with Justine. I've watched the first one, and she really liked the first episode as well.
So you'd watched it on your own, and then you rewatched
it.
Were you looking nervously down the sofa to see what her reaction was?
Slightly, but she really liked it.
So what's the premise?
Have you ever watched any of it?
I think I might have watched a little bit of the first one, and I haven't been back to it. I've just got
Jason Segel plays a psychotherapist who has lost his wife.
And he's a bit kind of off the rails.
And a bit off the rails with a teenage daughter. Harrison Ford is his mentor. And I think Harrison Ford is quite brilliant, actually, in it. And
is he curmudgeonly?
Yeah. What is it that I like about it? It's quite schmaltzy.
Right, that I struggle with a little bit.
Do you?
Schmaltziness, yeah.
I thought you would like schmaltziness.
No, I like something genuinely heartfelt. I'll often sit crying at the TV, but if I feel that somebody's deliberately pulling the strings, I very quickly close off from it.
Is that what schmaltzy implies?
I think so. Schmaltzy is kind of like a manufactured sentimentality.
I don't think that. I think that's a bit unfair. I think it's sort of quite insightful about grief, about sort of some of the artificiality of therapy, or not artificiality, but the. I mean, I don't want to give it away, but at the beginning of the series, Jason Segel tries to sort of, you know, break the boundaries of what therapy normally would do, I think it's fair to say. I think it's just very interesting.
Do you think it's an accurate portrayal of therapy?
No. Well, not at the beginning anyway.
Because that's something I think it's really hard to get right on screen. I think The Sopranos did it. And there's that show Couples Therapy, which I've recommended to you, which is brilliant. You know, that feels like real therapy sessions. But
why have you not gone near Shrinking then?
Just because of backlog.
Right.
But it's on a list of things for me to have a look at. But I love Harry. I mean, I really like, as I say, Jason Segel and Harrison Ford.
And what's the sort of front of the backlog, if you see what I mean?
Oh, the most recent thing I watched was a documentary called Love Has Won, Mother of God, which is about a former McDonald's manager who gave up her career in fast food and declared herself God and started a cult. And it's brilliant. It's a three-part documentary. Sometimes, you know, when things are just three episodes or so, it feels a bit more manageable than an entire series. How much of Shrinking is there?
10. But it's going to be the second series. It had generally positive reviews, but some people thought it was too schmaltzy. Mm. Maybe I'm just interested in therapy.
Well, I'm super. I mean, I'm so interested in therapy. Have I told you that I've started doing EMDR therapy?
No.
It's so interesting. The evidence on it compared to other forms of therapy is extremely good in terms of effectiveness, and it's a very odd experience. So it stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and a lot of it is, I guess, staring at a light whilst feeling your feelings. But Ed, I have never sobbed so much in a therapy session. I'm howling. Every week I'm howling.
Wow.
I don't quite know the principles behind it, but it's become a real thing recently. And part of the reason it's thought to be very good is, you know, you do therapy, it teaches you to rationalize, but sometimes the feelings that underpin stuff, they never quite go away.
Yeah.
I think EMDR is supposed to work on the feelings.
So just explain again what happened.
What you do is you take a memory.
Yeah.
So a memory with some trauma attached.
Yeah.
And then you sit in the memory of that whilst watching a light. And also you're holding these, I guess, like little vibrating things, pads in your hands. And because your eyes are focusing on this light and your mind's slightly distracted by these pads, then you're not kind of getting caught up in that front layer of thoughts.
Wow.
You're just straight into the memory. And I mean, I don't know.
How long have you been doing it?
I think I've done three sessions so far. And if I'm judging it just on how much I cry in a session, it's unbelievable. But it's and a lot comes up. What it feels like is every time you do EMDR, you're generating like enough for a year's worth of regular therapy. But that's not the point of it, really. The point of it is to work on the feelings that are underpinning a memory.
How extraordinary.
Mm. And I know, like, as I'm saying it, I know people will be listening to this and thinking, oh, flashing lights, vibrating pads, this sounds like quackery. But there's really good evidence behind it.
Gosh. And what does it have over sort of conventional talking therapy?
As I say, so you know, say you were doing cognitive behavioural therapy,
yeah.
saying yeah, that you... I don't know, had a fear of flying. And then you would break down that fear into rational thoughts and likelihood of anything happening and, you know, kind of taking it apart, deconstructing it. Then hopefully the rationality overrides the irrationality of the phobia. That's kind of how cognitive behavioral therapy works-ish. Please don't scream at your headphones if you're a therapist saying that's not how it works at all. But you get what I'm getting at. But often that feeling in your gut doesn't go away. Even when you've been through something in either analysis or CBT or whatever, you can quickly recognize something and move through it. But the feeling that underpins it,
yeah,
is still there. And I think the idea, or one of the ideas of EMDR is it works on neutralizing those feelings.
By sort of working it through, or sort of...
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how it works.
Crumbs. How often do you do it?
Once a week. I've been doing it once a week. And then I took a couple of weeks off over Christmas. Not as a holiday from it, just the therapist wasn't around, you know.
Wow.
I'd do it every day if I had the means.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. Wow. It's not a nonsense.
No, doesn't sound like a nonsense at all. So I sent you this article that I read. It's funny how... So basically, there's this article which was written 20 years ago by a guy called Nicholas Spice in London Review of Books about... this author called Adam Phillips, and is about therapy. And it's what's so interesting about this article, and I've since met Nicholas Spice, but what's so interesting about this article is I still remember this article from 20 years ago. I think it was my mum who pointed it out to me, and it basically is an article about therapy. I don't know whether you've had a chance to look at it.
But actually, it's not the first time it's come up. You've sent me this before,
really?
And we've not on the podcast, I don't think, but we've talked about it before, and it's an extraordinary piece of writing.
It's basically the basic, and we'll put it in the show notes, but basically it's a sort of, the fundamentally clever thing it does, it sort of says that we live most of our lives with a level of, not dishonesty, but concealed thoughts, basically, and that therapy is a sort of, kind of, very, how do I put this, kind of kind of lives in a different world from that, basically.
Yes.
And that he's sort of saying, I think one of the reasons why people are, and maybe they're less suspicious of it than they were, is because it's so challenging of the world that we live in, basically. And then he's just got some incredible writing.
When you met him, did he remember the piece, or was it just something?
Yeah,
he
more
out?
Or less, I think. Yeah, but it wasn't. You know, he was very modest about it. I just think it's just a brilliant piece of writing, and it's got this final paragraph, which I've probably read to you before. Beyond this, psychoanalysis does something altogether breathtaking. Out of the unworkability of its own project, and as though to upbraid us with the comfortable dishonesty of our ordinary human bonds, it fashions an image of pure trust. Not trust based on the appetitive deal-making of friendship and love, but a groundless, purposeless, unjustifiable trust between two human beings holding a conversation on the edge of the abyss. I mean, I do think it's a pretty extraordinary piece of writing.
Yeah, describing therapy as a conversation on the edge of abyss is quite brilliant, because that's what it is at its best. You know, you should be feeling, I guess, like you're not being judged in any way.
Exactly, exactly.
So you can be free, even free to be boring.
Yeah, well, there's quite a lot of that in this drinking as well. At least I just remember now, because I just rewatched the first episode. There's quite a lot of that about the boring patient, you know.
I do wonder about that.
Funnily enough, Justine was saying the same thing to me. Yeah,
what?
You know, what you mean? You wonder whether people are just the therapist is like, oh god, here he goes again.
Yeah, imagine if a therapist fell asleep on you in the middle of a session. That would be terrible, wouldn't it?
Would be bad.
Yeah.
That's never happened to you.
Not yet, but, you know, I am quite boring in some of those sessions, so it wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, the other context to this is I met over Christmas at a drinks thing somebody called Richard Layard, Lord Layard, who is approaching 90, who is best known, I think, first of all, for being a sort of prestigious labour economist, so economist of work at the economics at the LSE. But he took up this cause of psychological therapy in the NHS during the latter years of the Labour government. And funnily enough, I was just talking to him at this party about sort of how far it had got. And then I sort of looked back at it, and it's quite striking because he was, you know, and I know there's massive, massive problems with mental health care in the NHS. And you know, I sort of want to kind of be clear about that. The thing, though, is that when he started pushing this improving access to psychological therapy service in the mid-2000s, you know, the NHS was just not really in any sense, I think, at the races on this.
Mm.
And just looking at the record of, I sort of happened to look up last night, that just thinking about, we're going to have this conversation. Since 2008, services have, it's been now, you know, 15 years, have tried the course of treatment to over 6.5 million people, with 665,000 treated in the last year alone. And his aim, Richard's aim, was to have 10,000 therapists and practitioners, and indeed they now have them. And, you know, it's one of those things about, you know, governments can sort of, well, somebody once said, you know, governments can overestimate what they can do in the short term, but underestimate what they can do in the long term. And, you know, it is, I was talking to Richard about this, and it is quite striking what an impact, I'm not saying it's him on his own, but he really pushed this.
Yeah, that's really impressive, actually, isn't it? Because I think you can often look at this, and I'm not saying that this isn't the way to look at it, through the lens of it can be hard for people to see someone or get the right treatment. But part of that is, I guess, the explosion in us being better at talking about and understanding these issues. Because actually the provision has increased dramatically.
Yeah.
As you say, so that is something to be celebrated, whilst at the same time acknowledging there's a lot of things still to be fixed.
Yeah, and I suspect this IAPT, well, it's no longer called IAPT, I think it's called Talking Therapies, is, there might be a difference between I suspect at the more acute end, there are massive, massive problems.
Mm.
Now, some of this will be for acute therapy, but some of it won't be. I think when you think about that article that was written 20 years ago, we have changed our attitude a lot in those 20 years, haven't we?
Oh, God, yeah. I first started accessing mental health services, I think, when I was 20 or 21, so like 93, 94. And it was something that existed but wasn't really talked about, and there was such stigma about any kind of medicating or therapy. And I think, I mean, maybe it's not quite the same across different generations, but it's changed so dramatically. I think there's no stigma for people our age or younger.
You think no stigma
about therapy?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but then maybe then I am slightly blended by the circles that I move in, but
do you think that there is? No, I don't know. I mean, but I think you're basically right. It's a transformation, isn't it?
I think say somebody in a public role 20 years ago, if it turned out that they were medicating for depression or going for therapy, that would have been a horrible tabloid news story.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
And I don't think in the UK, I don't think that would be the case now.
No, I think that is true.
I think so many people have accessed those services, and conversations about mental health or mental well-being have come on so much that wouldn't be seen as in any way shameful.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true. That is a reason to be cheerful, as we'd have said on the old brand.
I like that.
So it could catch on.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, I've had an idea of how we could increase the reach of the Chatteroo.
Go on.
It's welcoming a third person in.
Yeah.
Steamboat Willie era Mickey Mouse. I thought he could be our sidekick.
You've left me stunned.
So do you not know about this? So yeah. The copyright on the very earliest iteration of Mickey Mouse, which was in an old black and white film called Steamboat Willie, has now lapsed. There were court cases in the 80s to extend it beyond regular copyright law, but it's finally fallen out of copyright. So just like Winnie the Pooh, Steamboat Willie era Mickey Mouse is now in the public domain and people can repurpose and sample and make works inspired by him. So I thought we could invite him into the podcast. Hey, Steamboat Willie era Mickey Mouse, which party will you be voting for at the general election? give us a little whistle if it's the Labour Party. Oh, and would you like to see Ed as climate secretary? There's an endorsement for you, Ed.
I'm just sort of catching up with this. So basically, Disney tried to keep the copyright but failed. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. They already extended it beyond what was the law at the time. There was some cartoonist, I think, in the 70s who drew some parody images of Mickey and Minnie Mouse in, shall we say, uncompromising situations. And Disney took him to court, and I think he had to pay them a lot of money. But now they're at the end of the copyright road. So what you can't do is use an image of Mickey Mouse as he appears at Disneyland or Disney World or anything. But this really early black and white film version of him is anybody's to repurpose now. And I think kids are making horrible slash films of Mickey Mouse doing terrible things.
That's amazing. And I wanted to mention, I'm reading an extraordinary book called The Overstory by Richard Powers. And really, it's a book about sort of nature and the extraordinary power of nature. But that saying doesn't give it its due justice, really.
It's a novel, isn't it?
It's
and
a
it's, sort of it's epic, told across the generations.
Yeah, it's a sort of epic novel, but really, it was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 2018. It's really about the extraordinary nature of nature and trees and so on. And so led me to say to Justine over Christmas, how old is a tree in our garden? And she sort of looked at me as if to say,
why are you asking me this? How should I know?
Yeah. Made me wonder if there's an app to work out how old a tree is.
Well, what sort of tree is it, do you know?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Well, first of all, you need an app like Shazam, but
yeah,
for
there
trees.
Is one of those, a plant identifier, yeah.
And then I guess you'd be able to know something by its circumference, wouldn't you? So just it will vary from tree to tree.
Yeah.
But there'll be some kind of rule of thumb that says if it's, I don't know, a metre and a half around its waist, then it's probably in the region of this many years.
I mean, honestly, I can't emphasise how extraordinary this book is. It is genuinely a captivating. I think it's because lots of the things one reads about nature are sort of, well, not pessimistic, maybe kind of about the decline of biodiversity and all of that. And this is really partly a celebration of the power of nature and its sort of intelligence, really.
Mm. Is there something about, not the insignificance?
And I genuinely didn't think I would like the book. I genuinely thought this is not a book that I'm really going to, that's really going to be for me. And I just sort of picked it up and started reading it, and then I was just completely hooked.
What, did you just see it on the table in the bookshop?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Because I don't think of you as a great fiction reader.
No. So over the holidays, I tend to read fiction. But it was highly recommended to me. And I think I heard an interview with him on the Ezra Klein podcast some years back. Anyway, I really, genuinely...
And is there something about, I guess the passing of passing of time for a tree is very different to what it is for a human being. And then how we're so obsessed with a human-centric view of the world. But is it about taking a step back from that a little bit?
It sort of is, yeah, really. Yeah. It basically is. Which often I can find quite, what's the right word, not frightening, but sort of daunting.
Mm.
Because it sort of makes you one feel very... It makes one feel one's insignificance in a way. You know what I mean?
Did I tell you that in the writer's room at Seinfeld, Jerry Seinfeld pinned up on the wall a picture of the Earth from space? And any time they were getting too bogged down in a problem or too stressed out about a problem, he'd say, look, do you see that planet there? Everyone you ever known or will know, yeah, everything that just happened on it. And look, it's insignificant. And I don't know about you, but I draw no comfort from that at all.
No, I don't either.
I'm really bad at putting my own problems into that kind of universal perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's sort of... But it's funny, that's not what the book makes you think, actually. The book is more... The thing I take out, I'm only sort of about halfway through, but the thing I take most from the book is the sort of sense of the kind of brilliance and genius of nature and trees and so on, which you don't really ever think about. Not just their age, but their... It's quite a lot about fungi as well.
Oh,
remember
good.
We did an episode of...
Close to do with Merlin.
Yeah, Merlin Sheldrake.
Yeah. Oh, I'll have a look at that then. So you managed to get some time away from your devices then and with your head in a book.
I did. Yeah, no, very good. And... What are we going to do on the podcast this year, do you think, then?
I think we'll have chats, and we'd love to know
We'd like to be shaped by the listeners, wouldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason we have pivoted to Chatteroo is we haven't got the capacity to do the kind of research-heavy, lots of guests getting deep into topics as we were with Reasons to be Cheerful. But if there's things that you think are interesting for us to have a look at, or you'd like to hear Ed's take on, articles you've seen, books you've read, films you've watched,
well,
whatever
people you'd
is,
like to ask to interview, because we did the interview with Ben, didn't we? Ben Ansell, last week.
Yes. Yes, me, Ed, and Steamboat Willie would love to invite the odd other person into our chat from time to time. It's just it's just us now, so we haven't got anybody to do all the guest wrangling and booking.
Is that not revealing too much about how sort of useless we were?
I think people understand that certainly you have a job. I don't think anybody was expecting that you would do all that.
It makes us sound slightly sort of, you know, hopeless, really, though.
But that is a job, isn't it? I mean, finding three people to talk on a podcast
indeed,
and researching them every week
indeed,
is a
indeed.
Job, and unfortunately we don't have the capacity for that. Yeah.
No, but we can talk. We'll find people, interesting people to talk to.
Yeah, if there's anybody you'd like us to have a little welcome into the Chatteroo, then let us know about it, as well as any things that have grabbed your attention that you think it'd be interesting to hear us discuss. Is probably too heavy a word.
No, discuss is...
Are we discussing?
Yeah.
We're shooting the breeze.
Are you going to watch Shrinking then, or not, really?
I'd like to, yeah. Do you want me to...
That was a high voice.
No, I would like to, but I also do a TV recommendations podcast where I have like a long list of things that I have to watch because either we're interviewing somebody or because they're the thing that everybody is talking about. But why do you want to set me homework? Would you like me to have watched an episode of that by the time we speak again?
Well, that seems a bit unfair.
I can do that. I can find the time.
That means you might be able to set me homework.
It does, but maybe I'll keep that card in my back pocket.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So anyway, email us. We have a brand new email address. It's chat@cheerfulpodcast.com. We haven't even mentioned that we're wearing matching jumpers today.
That's true.
It's like we're in uniform.
Not deliberately.
No. Maybe we should get a cheerful a chatteruniform. Maybe we should get a chatteruniform for 2024 with our names on them. You're not into it, are you? What about just like little badges like Mormons wear? No? Okay. Well, you can't say I didn't try. No bad ideas in brainstorming.
Well, you've disproved that.
All right. Have a lovely week.
Thank you. You too.